Love Talk Radio.
Googly moogly. Lot to get to. A lot of healthcare talk. Healthcare talk from every different angle. We got Trump care. We got what the Democrats are doing to single payer in the various states. So we're going to spend a hell of a lot of time on that. We have the White House press briefings. Apparently cameras have been turned off for those. I'll tell you my take on that. And there are no winners in that scenario. And later on in the show, Alex Jones is losing his goddamn mind even worse than before. Wait until you see his new goofy-ass segment. All right, so without further ado, let's get started. And we're going to go to the Congressional Budget Office. Talk about what they released. The Congressional Budget Office released their analysis of the Senate's version of Trump Care, and it's bad. It's very, very bad. The U.S. Senate bill overhauling Obamacare would result in 22 million fewer Americans with health insurance by 2026 and $772 billion less in Medicaid spending if it becomes law, according to a heavily anticipated estimate from the Congressional Budget Office. The nonpartisan analyst tasked with understanding the impact of major legislation also said the bill would remove 15 million additional people from the insurance rolls in 2018 alone. It is expected to cut the federal deficit by $321 billion over a decade. So when it came to the House version of Trump Care, the number was 23 million fewer Americans with health insurance, which I believe would bring the total number of Americans without health insurance by the year 2026 to 53 million people. Under this bill, the Senate is usually where legislation from the House goes to become more moderate and get watered down. That's how much more moderate it became. It went from 23 million fewer Americans with health insurance to 22 million. So, wow! Don't go too far to the left there, guys. Goodness. And the Medicaid cuts were $880 billion in the House bill. Under the Senate bill, it's $772 billion. Unbelievable. So I have some more facts about this. Check this out. According to the CBO, premiums for a 64-year-old with middle income go from $6,800 under the Affordable Care Act, which is still way too much, by the way, to $20,500 under the Republican bill. So people who need care the most, you know, when you're getting up there in age, 64-year-old, that's just before you hit the Medicaid age, people right there in that sweet spot where they're going to need care the most, their premiums go from $6,800 under Obamacare to $20,500 under Trump Care. The bill's a joke, man. And then also, get this fact, this one just blows my mind. The tax cuts that 400 families, the richest 400 families, are going to get under TrumpCare equals the Medicaid expansion for 700,000 people. So remember, under this legislation, they're axing the Medicaid expansion. No more Medicaid expansion. The Medicaid expansion applied to people up to 133% of the poverty line. So if you made about $28,000 a year or less, you would qualify for Medicaid under Obamacare. They're axing the Medicaid expansion. And under the bill, the tax cuts that the richest 400 families receive, if we didn't give them those tax cuts, that money could be used to cover 700,000 people, give 700,000 people health care. Is there anybody who could defend this when you look at the facts, when you look at the merits? There's no way. Because the bill is simply crafted to be a giveaway to the rich and be a giveaway to the private health insurance companies. You know, Obamacare was bad enough because it was a massively watered-down piece of legislation. It was originally a right-wing plan. But that's what we got. But it was at least a step in the right direction. Under TrumpCare, this is just the absolute, utter destruction of the American healthcare system. Again, Obamacare is bad enough. The real answer is Medicare for all. But this is just, it's like a joke. It's like they're playing a sick joke on you. Oh, yeah, I got one more fact for you. Under a new study that was just released, there would be an extra 28,000 people that die every year if TrumpCare were to be in place. So we already have thousands of people that die because they don't have access to basic health care. 45,000, according to a Harvard study. Under TrumpCare, add another 28,000 to the 45,000. Look, this is what happens when your political spectrum is all screwed up. So in the U.S., the Republicans have moved to the right, and the Democrats have followed them. So now the Democrats act like what used to be described as a moderate Republican, and the Republicans act like they're in a mental institution. They're authoritarian corporatists through and through, to the point where they barely try to conceal it anymore. Remember, saying that Obamacare was a right-wing idea, it's not an opinion, that's just a fact. I mean, this is the kind of legislation that Richard Nixon proposed. That's the kind of legislation that Bob Dole was in favor of. That's what Mitt Romney put into place in Massachusetts. The Heritage Foundation, which is a right-wing think tank, wrote policy papers about how their answer, the right-wing answer to Medicare for All, is an individual mandate system where you make a rule that people have to buy insurance on the private market. So that's just what it is. It just is a right-wing reform. So when the Democrats adopt the old Republican position, the Republicans said, we got to move further right. And what's further right? Some sort of bill that Genghis Khan would have created. And that's what the results are here. And thankfully, there's a lot of outrage over this. There's already been, I think, three Republicans who've come out against this bill. So, I mean, knock on wood, let's hope that this thing is dead in the water, though I don't know if it is, to be sure. But it better be, because this is a horrendous piece of legislation. And remember, the very similar House bill, the TrumpCare version in the House, that had an approval rating of a whopping 17%. So you know how they always bitch about Obamacare? Oh, my God, Obamacare is unpopular. Shoved down the throats of the American people. Yeah, Obamacare, depending on what time you look at it, because it sometimes it had like a 51 or 52% approval rating overall. But when it's unpopular, it has like a 46% approval rating. And the Republicans are like, oh, American people hate it. We got to get rid of it. Your bill has a 17% approval rating. They're like, yeah, no, we don't care about that. We're going to shove this one down everybody's throats. And remember, with Obamacare, that fact is a little misleading because virtually all of the provisions, when you get into the specifics of Obamacare, virtually all of the provisions except the individual mandate are overwhelmingly popular. So, and remember, under this bill, too, there's waivers for protecting people with pre-existing conditions. So the states can say, we don't want to protect people with pre-existing conditions, and they don't have to under this bill. And there's a million other waivers as well that they could just opt out of. Under Obamacare, at least 80% of the money that insurance companies have and that they take in needs to go towards actual health care, and only 20% can be used for overhead. Under this bill, that's now optional also. The states can opt out of, hey, we don't want to have a ratio where 80% of the health insurance money has to go to care. So you couldn't bias a bill more in favor of the rich and the corporations and the private health insurance companies and big pharma. That's what we see right here. And frankly, it's a joke. So I hope it gets defeated resoundingly. Okay. Next. All right, so there we went after the Republicans with the CBO report. Now, uh-oh, SpaghettiOs, time to go after the Democrats. Here we go. Here we go, 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 go. Single-payer health care has been officially defeated in California. Now, how did that happen? Why did that happen? Because of a Democrat. A Democrat. Listen to this. Hopes of single payer supporters across the country were dashed Friday night when the Democratic Speaker of the California Legislature killed a single payer health insurance reform bill written by California Democrats. California Assembly Speaker Anthony Rendon announced Friday afternoon that he was holding on the bill to bring universal single-payer health care to the most populous state, effectively killing the bill for at least the rest of 2017. Quote, I have decided SB 562 will remain in the Assembly Rules Committee until further notice, Rendon said in a statement. The Healthy California Act by Senators Ricardo Lara and Tony Atkins passed the California State Senate 23-14 last month, but will now be denied a similar floor vote by the state assembly. So it's not like Democrats voted it down. It's that this one Democrat decided, I'm not even going to allow a vote on it. Wow, that's loathsome. An idea which, by the way, over 80% of Democrats support, over 60% of the country supports it, and even over 50% of Republicans support it. So single payer, wildly popular. A Democrat in California said, I'm just gonna crush it. And Democrats have a supermajority in California. So why would you expect people to get off their ass and vote for you? If they tell you exactly what they want and you go, no, we good, I'm not going to do that. And then you're going to bitch and moan and try to shame people if the Democrats lose in upcoming elections. You say, oh, come on, why didn't you take your lesser evilism? Just accept it. What's wrong with you? Take your half measure, take your quarter measure, and shut up. We have to represent the corporate donors too. Selfish. But this is the core problem, the fundamental problem with the corporate Democrats, is that they'll pretend like they're progressive, they'll pretend like they're liberal, they'll talk a good game, but they're just oftentimes lying to you. Roseanne DeMauro of National Nurses United was saying this the other day. The difference between a corporate Democrat and a Republican is that the Republican doesn't pretend to be in favor of single payer. Whereas the corporate Democrat does, and then when they have the opportunity, area A, subsection C of the bill, line 321, there's a misplaced comma, so like I can't do this because the bill is just, we're not ready for this, and you got to work out the details and stuff, so we're just going to shelve it. By the way, if you wanted to like get more specific and work out the details, hey, dipshit, work out the details. Work out the details. Oh, hey, let's sit down, let's figure out exactly how we're going to craft this. We got to really get into the nitty-gritty of this and do our fucking jobs as legislators and try to figure out exactly how we're going to implement this. But no, he doesn't do that. He's like, oh, yeah, this is very complicated, so we're just going to shelve it. The fuck? Are you fucking kidding me? But that's your job. Do your fucking job. Get all the specifics and the details, iron it out, and then pass it. No, I'm not even going to allow a vote on it. I wonder why he's not allowing a vote on it. Well, For that, let's shoot on over to the International Business Times and see what they have to say. Since 2012, Rendon has taken in more than $82,000 from business groups and healthcare corporations that are listed in state documents opposed to the measure. According to an International Business Times review of data amassed by the National Institute on Money and State Politics, in all, he has received more than $101,000 from pharmaceutical companies and another $50,000 from major health insurers. In the same time, the California Democratic Party has received more than $1.2 million from the specific groups opposing the bill and more than $2.2 million from pharmaceutical and health insurance and industry donors. That includes $100,000 infusion of cash from Blue Shield of California in the waning days of the 2016 election, just before state records show the insurer began lobbying against the single-payer bill. So there it is right there. There it is. We live in a corporatocracy. The Democrats, who are supposed to be liberal, supposed to be progressive, supposed to look out for the people, supposed to have this as a core fundamental policy that you're for. In an instant, in a flash, they flip, they're not for it, and it is because of the money that they're taking from big donors. So don't tell me that money in politics isn't the number one issue that we face in the country, because it's the issue that affects all other issues. You're not going to get substantive legislation to address a plethora of problems until you get money out of politics. And since we don't have that right now, we have to try to find a way to have people-powered politicians get in there so they can fight for the right things and they only represent the people. Look, it's just human nature. Oh, hey, I took money from giant corporations. Well, guess what? You're going to represent those corporations. I scratch your back, you scratch mine. And if you want that next check for that next election, which you're going to need in their mind, well, okay, then I got to do it. They just grandfather it into their thinking. Hey, look, every now and then I'll throw the American people a bone, or in this case the people of California a bone, and do some sort of pseudo-progressive legislation that appeases them and gets them off my fucking ass. Hey, look, I'm in favor of gay marriage, and I'm in favor of being liberal on social issues. Isn't that wonderful? But then on economics, what am I going to do? Look, I have no choice. My arm is twisted. Isn't like Obamacare enough? Shut the fuck up and just accept Obamacare. You want single payer? Is that what you want? You want like everybody to be covered at a lower cost? Is that what you want? Sorry, I can't do it. What am I going to do? I mean, I take money from Big Pharma. I take money from health insurance companies. It is what it is. I just have to, that's just a line I can't cross. Well, okay, a line we can't cross as real progressives and liberals is voting for your punk ass. How about that? How about this one's non-negotiable? How about if you're not in favor of single payer, you don't get our votes? So go ahead, make your choice. Make your choice. Oh, sorry, I have to vote with the corporations. Okay, well then you're going to lose your seat. Now, they think if I don't vote with the corporations, I don't raise the money from the corporations, then I'll lose my seat that way too. But no, you won't, because there's another model, and Bernie Sanders showed us the way. He didn't have a super PAC. He raised money $27 at a time. And guess what? He was able to raise a tremendous amount of money. Now you say, oh, well, he didn't win. But yes, he had the entire corporate media biased against him. Virtually every establishment politician in the country against him. The DNC was rigging the process from day one. And the guy still won 47% of the vote against a political behemoth, Hillary Clinton, the biggest name in Democratic politics. And he won 22 states. So he showed that it's possible. Take no corporate money, no PAC money, only raise in small amounts from the people and then represent the people. You can do it. It can be done. But these guys are too far gone. They made it to this point in the corrupt system, so they'll defend the corrupt system come hell or high water. But okay, if you want to go in this way, we're not going to vote for you. It's as simple as that. This guy has been flooded so overwhelmingly with phone calls, with tweets, with all that stuff since doing this. And it's good. I hope he loses his job. I hope he looks in the mirror at night and can't sleep, and he realizes he's a scumbag, and he's the textbook definition of a sellout. Because how many people will not get coverage? How many people will die because we didn't get single payer in California now. California's like the sixth biggest economy in the world. It's like its own country. Yeah, well, single payer, what am I going to do? I took some money from health insurance companies and big pharma. I can't pass it. Okay, well, then they can't vote for you. People can't vote for you because you're a disgusting sellout. This is a policy that over 80% of Democrats want. Over 60% of the country wants it. Shame on you for not being in favor of democracy and for not making the U.S. catch up to every other modern nation. Because every other modern nation has one version or another of a single-payer system. Every single one. Cover everybody. Costs are less. Here, we don't have it. Millions of people uninsured. 45,000 people dying every year because they don't have access to basic care. And Democratic politicians spit in your eye and kill single-payer bills that already advanced. Absolutely disgusting. And Anthony Rendon, you're a scumbag. You're a corporate sellout and a scumbag. It's as simple as that. Okay, next. Let me squeeze in one more, then we'll take a quick break. Jerry Brown, the Democratic governor of California, was apparently working behind the scenes, doing everything he could to make sure that the single-payer bill didn't get to his desk. So it got over a few hurdles, but then it was killed by Anthony Rendon, a corporate sellout and a scumbag. But apparently Jerry Brown was rooting for this thing to not get to his desk because he didn't want to sign it if it did. So here's what he said about single-payer recently. I think this was in March. This is Jerry Brown, the governor. Where do you get the extra money? This is the whole question. I don't even get, how do you do that? So, you know, a Democrat governor saying, yeah, well, we get the, I can't afford it. Pie in the sky, liberals, fairy dusters. Yeah, you crazy? You can't afford this. Interesting. Well, here we have a video clip for you. This is from 1992. This is when Jerry Brown was running for president, and he had quite a good answer to that question. And in fact, he had an answer to any questions that one might have about single payer.
Of my preference is that we create a single system, put everyone under a universal healthcare system. We treat healthcare not as a commodity to be played with for profit, but rather the right of every American citizen when they're born. And there's a model in Canada. Obviously, we want to make it something more attuned to our own country. But when I see in Canada that they pay $500 less per person, that they cover every citizen, and that they live 2 years longer and their infant mortality is 50% less, then I see a model. Here's what it is. You cut out all the private health insurance. You have one single payer, either at the national level or through the 50 states, and that one single payer will be the one that negotiates with the doctors, the hospitals, and the other providers. And since you have only one source of income in the whole medical establishment, you can drive down the costs. With the holding down of the costs, you can eliminate the intermediary, the middleman, the bureaucracy. In some of these hospitals, there's more people doing the billing than there are in direct patient care on an eight-hour shift. It doesn't make any sense. But through a single payer, as we've seen in Canada, you can eliminate tremendous amounts of paperwork both for the doctors, the hospitals, and the part of the insurance companies.
Wow. That guy nailed it back in 1992. Single payer costs less. It costs less. Say it with me. It costs less. So what is he talking about? Where are we going to get the money? Where are we going to get the money for our current system? Unnecessary, rapacious, for-profit middleman price gouging everybody. Where are we going to get the money for that? Nobody ever says that. No, nobody ever says that. When it comes to single payer, which costs less and covers everybody, yeah, we can get the money. Weird. When Democrats, get involved in politics when they're younger, you know, they tend to be idealistic in a positive sense. They tend to want to create a better society, fix problems, but then the longer they're in power, the more that corporate money gets to them, the more they get used to the status quo and business as usual, and then eventually you wind up with a Hillary Clinton-like character and a Jerry Brown-like character who they turn on basic progressive and liberal priorities. Again, this isn't a tough one. This isn't like, oh, man, let's think about it. Hey, what's your opinion on this? What's your opinion on this? Everybody's is valid. Let's talk about it like it's up in the air and we don't have the answers. No, anybody who cares about the actual numbers and facts and the science on this, the studies on this, when you compare the U.S. to the rest of the modern world and their systems versus our systems, they cover more people, they cover everybody and pay less and have better outcomes. Where's the debate? Where is the goddamn debate? There is no debate. It's the private health insurance companies that have bought the government, bought politicians, Republican and Democratic, and big pharma, and it's big money in politics that has led us to this point. So Jerry Brown, shame on you. Bring back the Jerry Brown from 1992. Okay. Let's take that break real quick. And then when we get back, Ralph Nader speaks about the decline of the Democratic Party, and then we'll get into more stuff on Trump Care and the White House press briefings banned cameras. What? you'll hear it. All right. We'll be right back, guys. Stay right there.
Thank you.
right, y'all, we back.
Here
we go, jumping right back into it. Ralph Nader spoke to The Intercept about the decline of the Democratic Party, and I want to give you some of his points here because he really hits the nail on the head. So this is a little long, but bear with me because it's worth every second of it. Here's what he says. Do you want me to go through the history of the decline and decadence of the Democratic Party? I'm going to give you millstones around the Democratic Party neck that are milestones. The first one was in 1979. Tony Coelho, who was a congressman from California and who ran the House Democratic campaign treasure chest, convinced the Democrats that they should bid for corporate money, corporate PACs, that they could raise a lot of money. Why leave it up to Republicans and simply rely on the dwindling labor union base for money when you had a huge honeypot in the corporate area? And they did. And I could see the difference almost immediately. First of all, they lost the election to Reagan, and then they started getting weaker in the Congress. At that time, 1980, some of our big allies were defeated in the so-called Reagan landslide against Carter. We lost Senator Nelson, Senator Magnuson, Senator Church. We had more trouble getting congressional hearings investigating corporate malfeasance by the Democrat congressional committee chairs. When the Democrats regained the White House in 1992, you could see the difference in appointments to regulatory agencies, the difficulty in getting them to upgrade health and safety regulations. Increasingly, they began to judge their challenge to Republicans by how much money they raised. You talk to Marcy Kaptur from Cleveland, she says, we go into the Democratic caucus in the House, we go in talking money, we stay talking money, and we go out with our quotas for money. As a result, they took the economic issues off the table that used to win again and again in the 30s and 40s for the Democrats. The labor issues, the living wage issues, the health insurance issue, pension issues. And that, of course, was a huge bonanza for the Republican Party because the Republican Party could not contend on economic issues. They contended on racial issues, on bigotry issues, and that's how they began to take control of the solid Democratic South after the civil rights laws were passed. Raising money from Wall Street, from the drug companies, from health insurance companies, the energy companies, kept Democrats from their main contrasting advantage over the Republicans, which is FDR's. Which is, in FDR's parlance, the Democratic Party is the party of working families, Republicans are the party of the rich. That flipped it completely and left the Democrats extremely vulnerable. The third millstone is they decided to campaign by TV, with political consultants influencing them and getting their 15 to 20% cut. When you campaign by TV, you campaign by slogans. You don't campaign by policy. Next millstone, the labor unions began getting weak, weak in numbers and weak in leadership. They began shelling out huge money to the Democrats for television, and as they became weaker, they lost their grassroots mobilization on behalf of the Democrats. The Democrats began the process of message preceding policy. No, policy precedes message. That means they kept saying how bad the Republicans are. They campaigned not by saying, look how good we are, we're going to bring you full Medicare for all. We're going to crack down on corporate crime against workers and consumers and the environment, stealing, lying, cheating you. We're going to get you a living wage. We're going to get a lean defense, a better defense, and get some of this money and start rebuilding your schools and bridges and water and sewage systems and libraries and clinics. Instead of that, they campaign by saying, can you believe how bad the Republicans are? Now, once they say that, they trap their progressive wing because their progressive wing is the only segment that's going to change the party to be a more formidable opponent because they say to their progressive wing, you've got nowhere to go. Get off our back. Every word of that is spot on. Every single word of that. I don't even know if I have anything to add to it. It is just, it's almost like the caricature parody version of that today. That's what we see with the corporate Democrats, where they'll scream about Russia all day long, but try getting a Democrat to really hammer away on getting Medicare for all. Try getting a Democrat to hammer away on free college. Try getting a Democrat to hammer away on ending the wars. Try getting one to hammer away on ending the drug war. Try get one to hammer away on a living wage. Pretty much the best you get, except for from Bernie Sanders and perhaps from time to time Elizabeth Warren, the best you get is like a tepid endorsement of some of those ideas. But even that, when push came to shove and it's actually time to vote on it, they wouldn't do it. We're seeing that right now in California with the Democrats and single payer. They have a supermajority, and a Democrat just killed single payer. So when your party is based on, man, the other guys suck, and, you know, Russia, 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 hysteria, let me scream about something that has zero policy implications for you so I don't have to promise you anything. People see through it, man. You're not going to dupe the progressive base. Let me repeat that. You're not going to dupe the progressive base. If they were going to be duped, you know, Hillary Clinton would have won. Or it would have been the progressive base holding their nose and saying, all right, whatever. Lesser evil, here we go. But Donald Trump won, who had a 60% unfavorability rating, the day he won. The Republicans have picked up 1,000 seats since Obama got elected the first time. The Democrats are wiped out at every level of government. Why? Because the prominent Democratic model is corporatism, so-called centrism, neoliberalism. Abandon the economic issues. Kind of agree with the Republicans on economic issues, on regulatory issues, on tax issues. There's minor differences, and the Democrats are a little better, but not much. Abandon important, serious domestic issues, living wage, Medicare for all, free college, which used to be cornerstones of the Democratic Party, and say, oh, aren't we so progressive? Look, we don't despise gay people and black people. The definition of a low bar. The definition of a low bar. No, we need candidates who are there on all the social issues. Yes, you should be in favor of gay marriage. Yes, you should be in favor of equal rights for everybody. But then also you need to be in favor of Medicare for all and free college and ending the wars, ending the drug war, and so re-regulating Wall Street, so on and so forth. But no, they're a vapid party, and it's become more and more vapid ever since they started accepting corporate money, and then look where we are now. The Democratic Party is in shambles, and the Clinton wing is still doing everything it can to hold on to power. But by the way, that's why Justice Democrats are here, because our whole movement is based on creating a party, an entire party in Bernie Sanders' image. The entire movement is based on bringing back those old school Democrats that just rule out up front corporate money and PAC money. Not interested in corporate money, not interested in PAC money by any stretch of the imagination. So we only raise money from the people, and then we represent the people and small donations. Now, by the way, that's not even the full solution. The full solution is to get money out of the system, and if you support Justice Democrats, you're supporting candidates who are in favor of that and will take every avenue possible to do so. So the real answer is getting money out of the system, but until we get to that point, it's not an option to take corporate money and PAC money. It's just not an option because that leads to conflicts of interest by definition. It's just human nature. They give you money, you're going to do favors for them. We only want to do favors for the people, which isn't favors. That's called democracy. If you take from the people and then do for the people, that's democracy. That's the way it's supposed to work. But Justice Democrats, you're going to be the only group, the only wing of a political party in America, well, of the two major political parties, that's in favor of actual democracy and looking out for the people. JusticeDemocrats.com. By the way, we do need you because we are at an institutional financial disadvantage because our opponents just take giant checks from billionaires and corporations and PACs, and we need to raise a little bit at a time, so we do need you. JusticeDemocrats.com/donate. And by the way, we're still doing a Secular Talk shirt drive for Justice Democrats. So half the proceeds go to Justice Democrats as a political contribution to them and to all of our candidates. And if you're interested in that, it's booster.com/secular talk shirts, booster.com/secular talk shirts. I know I'm getting mine. We got two new shirts that came out, and you still have the old ones, the first generation and second generation Secular Talk shirts. So get involved whoever you can. Read our platform if you haven't. I know I say that all the time, but that platform is very important and is the future of the Democratic Party. So if they don't go in that direction and they stay doing what they're doing now, Ralph Nader is right. They're just a burning pile of ash that's utterly useless. Okay. All right, here we go. Now, Republican Representative Francis Rooney defended Trump Care's Medicaid cuts in perhaps the most infuriating way imaginable.
Let me cite the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, which says this is basically a program, that a bill that makes sure that the wealthy get tax cuts. The savings, a lot of it is expected to go in this bill toward tax cuts. And in fact, what the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities found is that $7 million a year is the tax a year that each of the 400 wealthiest families in America will get as a result of this. That's okay with you as people are losing their coverage?
See, I happen to think that tax cuts on it to stimulate investments, which is what this tax cut is. It's Obama put in a tax on investments. Cutting those taxes are very important to stimulate investments and job creation. I mean, sometimes these people don't seem to understand how capitalism works. When you incentivize investment, people deploy capital, create jobs, build companies, and put more people to work so they can afford all these things and not have to be on Medicaid.
Of the people, the majority of the people that these guys are kicking off their health care with their Medicaid cuts have jobs. They have jobs, but not every job offers health insurance and benefits, which this idiot would know if he wasn't incredibly privileged and in his own little DC bubble where everybody he knows has health insurance, because everybody he knows is either another politician or an executive where they work a very high-paying job. So, man, I love that they like smugly lecture you like you don't get shit when they don't get the most basic shit. The question is, hey, the richest 400 families, each one of them gets $7 million a year extra in tax cuts under Trump Care, and that is that translates to Medicaid cuts for 700,000 people who lose their Medicaid. He's like, hey, you know, I don't think you understand how capitalism works. Obviously, what will happen is this will stimulate the job creation, and then the people who are on Medicaid will get the jobs, and then they'll get the health care. Except I just told you, most people who are going to be kicked off their Medicaid under this bill already have a job. So he's talking out of his ass. What he's saying is not true. It's not close to true. It's just something he read on a right-wing blog somewhere that makes shit up, and he's just convinced of it. Think about that. Imagine being that guy. You're just presented with facts from the CBO, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, which said, hey, the richest 400 families each get $7 million extra a year under this bill, and that's going to take health care away from 700,000 people. Imagine hearing that and immediately scolding the other side and saying, you just don't understand how capitalism works. Somebody get this guy a monocle, and somebody get this guy a butler. I mean, what an out-of-touch scumbag. And these are the guys, they pretend from time to time when they're campaigning to be the party of the people, the party of the middle class, the party of the little guy. Look at that clip! Look at that clip! That's unbelievable! Here, let me tell you this really tangible, clear, horrific thing that's going to happen under your bill. The rebuttal is, you don't understand how capitalism works. Jesus, man. I mean, so that's just like the stock answer. You can give any disastrous conclusion or effect of any Republican policy, and they could just use that as the stock answer. You don't know how capitalism works. You can point out the deaths. 28,000 more people are going to die because of Trump care. We already have 45,000 people that die because they don't have access to basic health care. This is 28,000 more people because of Trump care. Tell that to this guy. What's his response? You don't understand how capitalism works. So there is no bottom. Hey, man, under this bill, everybody's grandma gets raped by a baseball bat with barbed wire on it. But, yes, but you don't understand how capitalism works. That's not a rebuttal. That's not a fucking rebuttal. That's a myopic idiot who regurgitates talking points in a reactionary way because he has no substance, he has no there, he has no logical response. So what a scumbag this guy is, and what a preposterous bill this is, which is going to hurt so many people to give tax cuts to the rich and also to let private health insurance companies continue to rob us. Okay, now let's move on to CNN and what's going down with these White House press briefings. For the past few days, the White House press briefings have banned cameras. Wow. So CNN's Jim Acosta went after Sean Spicer for exactly that. Let's watch the tense exchange here.
We need to figure out a way to make that work.
Jen, can you answer whether the president still believes the question?
There's no camera on, Jim.
Well, maybe we should turn the cameras on, Sean. Why don't we turn the cameras on?
Jen.
Why don't we turn the cameras on?
I'm sorry that you have to do it. Jen, go ahead.
Why not turn the cameras on, Sean? They're in the room. The lights are on.
It's not true that there was tension and some...
So CNN is taking this incident and trying to turn Acosta into some sort of First Amendment hero. I mean, the headlines over this have been, you know, melodramatic, is that the word? Or is it just dramatic? I don't know. They've been a little silly. So here's an idea. Turn the fucking cameras on. Like, what the fuck? Can you believe the White House is having these press briefings and not allowing cameras to be turned on? And what happens if you do turn the cameras on? Nothing. They can't do anything to you. They can't arrest you. They can't fine you. They can't do anything. So yeah, turn it on. And then let's say they kick you out. Hey, you had the cameras on last time, we kick you out. Then you can go off on how, oh, you're going to deny access to us, and this is, how can the government, you're supposed to represent the people, we're a watchdog for the people, the media is supposed to keep you in check, and you're not even going to allow us to come in there and listen to you? So, and by the way, what a goofy fucking rule to begin with. I don't know, what an erratic, ridiculous White House. It's probably Trump who came up with that idea and thought it was brilliant, even though it makes no sense. Spicer looks weak. He looks weak. Sad. So let's turn the cameras off. Tremendous idea, one of the best ideas. Turn the cameras off and everything will be okay. Turn the fucking cameras on, dude. They have no authority to tell you can't turn them on. Turn them on. Turn them on. Turn them on. But he's like begging permission from daddy.
Why can't we turn the cameras on, Sean? Why can't we turn the cameras on? And everything? First Amendment hero. Oh my God, First Amendment hero. Just turn the fucking cameras on. Just turn them on. Turn them on.
Man, these guys are so goofy. That's all I got for you on this one. Just turn the motherfucking cameras on. What's the worst that can happen? It ain't much. Okay. Okay, now let me move on to foreign policy. I want to show you just how much we've lost our minds when it comes to foreign policy. Look at this. White House warns of Syrian preparation for chemical attack. Now, pay attention to the wording here. The U.S. has identified potential preparations for another chemical weapons attack by the Assad regime in Syria, White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer said in a Monday night statement. Such an attack would likely result in the mass murder of civilians, including innocent children, Spicer added, noting the activity is similar to preparations the regime made before its April 4th, 2017 chemical weapons attack. Now, media outlets reached out to the Pentagon and were like, oh, hey, you know, look at the statement the White House made. The Pentagon was like, yeah, well, new phone, who this? What are you talking about? We don't even know what he's talking about. Apparently nobody else who actually, like, monitors these things is like, yeah, that's happening. So the White House just came out and made this erratic statement. And, again, the wording. Look at the wording. The U.S. has identified potential preparations. What does that even mean? So one thing, hey, we've identified preparations for a chemical attack. I don't know, so you're at a facility and you see the movement of chemical weapons or something when you're doing your spying or whatever. Potential preparations. Like, yeah, no, we could be planning for a chemical attack or they could be not doing it. It's potential. It's just potential. I use the word potential, so get off my ass. And it would likely result in the murder of civilians. Likely. It's likely. Hasn't happened yet. And yeah, okay, the Syrian army's fighting ISIS. But yeah, I mean, it likely result. It might in the future at some point maybe result in the murder of civilians. What are we going to do? We got to respond. Now, this is what they're saying. While the government, the Trump administration, is screaming about this, look at this from Foreign Policy not that long ago. The United States used depleted uranium in Syria. That's a chemical weapon. The airstrikes on oil trucks in Islamic State-controlled areas employed the toxic material, which has been accused of causing cancer and birth defects. So the exact thing that we're accusing the Syrian government of doing. Oh, my God, you're using chemical weapons. That's a violation of international law. And you've killed civilians with said chemical weapons. That's what we're doing. We're using chemical weapons, and we've killed civilians. It's like just the most overwhelming case of projection I've ever seen in my life. But I have one more for you, too. Look at this from the Washington Post. U.S.-led forces appear to be using white phosphorus in populated areas in Iraq and Syria. Now, again, they say, well, I mean, we're using it on ISIS. I don't know what you mean. No, but in reality, like, there was evidence they used it in Raqqa. Raqqa, yes, ISIS is there. In fact, it's their so-called capital. But it also has tens of thousands of civilians, including women and children, and they're using white phosphorus there, which is illegal under international law. You can't use white phosphorus in civilian-populated areas. You're not allowed to use depleted uranium tips at all. So let's review one more time. The U.S. is saying, hey, Assad, who gave up his chemical weapons, by the way, the U.N. oversaw it. Remember the whole episode a few years back? John Kerry and the Russian official, hey, is there anything that Assad could do to avoid you attacking him? John Kerry says, yeah, he could give up all of his chemical weapons, but that's not going to happen. The next day, Assad was like, here, take all my chemical weapons. So Assad, who gave up his chemical weapons, is potentially preparing for an attack that would likely kill civilians, maybe, kind of, not really, but we don't know, we're just saying. Maybe. Potential. And that's so bad that we need to immediately act. But the U.S. uses depleted uranium tips, white phosphorus, civilian-populated areas, and nobody says, hey, maybe it's time for regime change in the U.S. You know, maybe Russia shoots a Scud missile at the White House and replaces our authoritarian leader because he's such a tyrannical dictator who's using chemical weapons on civilians. Nobody says that. Nobody says that because we have different standards. If you're in enemy state, we will take the tiniest infraction and say, "That oh my God, regime change. We got it. We got a regime change. We got to do it. We got a regime change. We got to change it. I mean, look at what this guy's doing. He's jaywalking. Do you believe that regime is jaywalking? But for us, we're doing the exact same thing we're accusing him of doing. And by the way, the media, nobody's connecting the dots here. The media covered the depleted uranium thing, or very few outlets did, but some did, and they covered the white phosphorus thing. But nobody's saying now, hey, that what you just accused the Syrian government of doing, you did. Nobody's saying that, even though all the evidence is there. And by the way, there is no evidence, none. They've presented zero evidence for their accusations against the Syrian government using chemical weapons. None. They presented none. None whatsoever. And Seymour Hersh, legendary journalist, is out with a new article saying, yeah, the Assad government didn't really use it. And it's exactly what the jihadist rebels want you to believe. They want, oh my God, incredible dictator, tyrannical, you got to go topple him. And then, hey, maybe we fill the vacuum. Maybe us jihadists and Islamists, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, maybe we fill the vacuum. So, oh my God, look, brutal dictator, brutal dictator. Get rid of him and then let us get in charge. And don't worry, we won't be brutal. You're fucking jihadists. Propaganda all day long. I don't know what they're planning. But by the way, Trump has given a green light to the military-industrial complex to do whatever they want. All the neocons in the deep state are now running foreign policy. So they're trying here, man. They want to do regime change. They don't give a fuck that we shouldn't even be in Syria in the first place. They don't give a fuck that jihadists might fill the vacuum. They don't give a fuck that this escalates with Russia into a potential conflict with them because Russia backs the Syrian government. They don't care. The neocons want the exact opposite of what the American people want. They don't give a shit. We did what we accused them of doing. And we talk about world police, human rights, freedom, democracy. Anyway, let's us use chemical weapons on civilian populations as we accuse other governments of doing it. What a sick joke. Okay. All right, let me take my final break, quick one, and then when we come back, I got five more stories for you, including a politician in Ohio who has a brilliant proposal to let people die on the streets. I'm not kidding. Stay right there.
I'm not die bigger than my universe. I don't really care if you cry. I don't really shouldn't have a lie. Should've saw the way she looked me in my eyes. She said, baby, I am not afraid to die. Push me to the edge. All my friends are dead. Push the left. The left. The left, the left. You will fake, so I'm gon' grab you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the last real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left. Please don't make me slap you with the left, the left. You will
fake,
so I'm gon' grab you with the left.
We back, we back, we back. There's a brilliant politician in Ohio who's proposing letting people die in the streets. I'm not kidding about this. This is from Huffington Post. An Ohio City councilman concerned about the price of emergency services for opioid overdose victims wants to cut costs by denying some people access to life-saving treatment. Last week, Middletown Council member Dan Picard asked the city to explore the legality of a proposal to refuse city-dispatched medical services to any overdose victim who has sought an intervention twice before. Some local media outlets have branded the proposal as a three strikes policy. Quote, I want to send a message to the world that you don't want to come to Middletown to overdose because someone might not come with Narcan and save your life, Picard told Ohio's Journal News. We need to put a fear about overdosing in Middletown. So under this guy's genius idea, first two times, yeah, you could save them if they're overdosing. The third time, you just let them die in the street. So, you know, you're an ambulance, you roll up, you got the call, oh my God, this guy's overdosing on the ground, look at him. He's in a back alley laying there. You roll up, and you see that the guy's overdosing, and you just leave him. Or if you want to make, you know, really make an example of the guy, you bring him to the hospital, but then you don't treat him at the hospital, and you watch him overdose, and you record it to show people, yeah, don't do this, kids. Now let's let you die. You know what's worse than overdosing? Letting people die when you can save them and you have the ability to save them. Because that seems to me like one version or another of manslaughter, right? Like, oh, no, you can save this guy. You have the ability. Just do this very quick and easy. Inject his little thing. No. We're choosing not to do it. We're choosing not to do it. These guys are unbelievable, man. Imagine this in any other realm. Hey, look, look, look. The first two times you crash your car, we'll help you. But the third time, we want to disincentivize car crashes. So what am I going to do? I'm going to let you lay on the ground with your femur snapped in two places and your neck broken, and I'm going to let you bleed out in the street. Okay, you want me to be kind? I'll take you to the hospital and then watch you die there. How about that? Look, we want to disincentivize that. We want to disincentivize people crashing their cars. So that's what we're going to do. Oh, you have alcohol poisoning? If you had it twice before, we'll help you. If you have it the third time, we're just going to watch you die. That's what we'll do. That's what we'll do. Oh, you have heart disease? I mean, look, your diet and lack of exercise was the problem. Maybe we'll give you, the first bypass or the second bypass. But by the time it gets a triple or quadruple bypass, we're not going to do it. We got to send a message. Don't eat shitty. And don't, you know, avoid exercise. So we got to send a message. We don't want people having these problems here around our parts. So we're going to have to let you die. We're going to have to wait until you have your heart attack and just watch. It's like these guys were born in a different century. Like, his philosophy is so draconian, he either needs to go back centuries or go live in Saudi Arabia, because that's where that belongs, this kind of barbaric. What kind of a person doesn't look at somebody who's an addict like that with sympathy? And also, by the way, the reason why a lot of these people overdose is not because they took too much of the substance. It's because the substances are laced. You have, like, heroin that's laced with fentanyl, for example. And by the way, how did it get laced? Because the drugs are illegal. So when it's illegal, it goes on the black market. Unscrupulous people make them.
and they'll cut it with stuff that can kill you. If these things were legal, taxed, and regulated, they wouldn't take an overdose dose by accident. Wouldn't happen, because they know their limits. They do. Or, you know, overdoses would be cut dramatically in that instance, but no. So you ban drugs, which leads to the problem of laced drugs, then that kills people, and you stand there and watch them overdose and die. It's like we crafted a system to be as dumb as humanly possible. Okay. Next. Here's a wild story. Look at this from Mediaite. Jewish women with Star of David rainbow flags banned from Chicago Pride March. Three women were told to leave LGBT Pride festivities in Chicago on Saturday because their rainbow flags had the Star of David on them. According to Chicago's LGBT paper, Windy City Times, the women were told by the organizers of the 21st annual Chicago Dyke March that their flags made people feel unsafe. Lori Grauer, one of the women asked to leave, told the Windy City Times that she received her flag from her congregation that celebrates her queer Jewish identity and that she had marched with it at the parade for over a decade. The organizers of the Pride March, which is separate from Chicago's Pride Parade, defended their decision by issuing this statement on Twitter. The statement, I'm not going to read it to you, but I'll just give you the gist, declaring that the Jewish star on the rainbow flag solely represented the nation of Israel, not the symbol for Judaism. Okay. So, you gotta let him march, man. You gotta let him march. I mean, what are you doing? They have a right to be there just like anybody else does, and they're saying, hey, it represents my Judaism. I'm a Jewish gay person. Somebody was there as a Catholic gay person, as a Muslim gay person, whatever. We can point out that that's a little weird insofar as those religions typically frown upon homosexuality. So it's like, hey, you're part of a club where they don't want you. But then on the other hand, what they're doing is trying to represent a more liberal version, an open-minded, tolerant version of that religion, which it would be nice if everybody who was in those religions was more tolerant and open-minded like that as well. So yeah, you got to let them march. That's like a no-brainer. Now, whether it represented Judaism or Israel, though, that's interesting because they say, no, this is just representing Judaism and that's it. That's the reason why I have it on there. And the organizers are saying, no, the flags were like Israeli flags with, you know, the LGBT flag with it, like the colors there too. And on that front, yeah, like we're talking about an apartheid state. We're talking about a state that does permanent occupation and oppression of Palestinians and is doing more and more land grabs and building more and more illegal settlements. And, you know, they're not for fucking progress. And what we've seen here is that is an attempt, and Israel does this all the time. The right wing in Israel does this all the time. They use their better treatment of gays relative to surrounding Muslim theocracies. They use that as an excuse to tell people, look the other way while we oppress Palestinians, because we're so liberal and we're so open-minded and we're the only democracy in the Middle East. So, I mean, come on, we can't be bad, we can't be wrong, we can't be incorrect or doing barbaric shit, because, well, hey, look at us, we're so liberal. I mean, we treat gays well, women have equality, so we're relatively open-minded on that front, so therefore we get like a pass when we oppress Palestinians and take more and more land in the West Bank and bomb the shit out of Gaza and kill 80% civilians and have apartheid and do permanent occupation and violate international law brazenly. So the trick is you use liberal values as an excuse to do the opposite of liberal values. They're using liberal values in some areas to try to cover up the illiberal values in other areas. So yes, the like, you know, pro-gay Zionism, that's just such a contradiction. And it's, I understand people going, hey, fuck off with that bullshit, because it's bullshit. That's what it is. It's fucking bullshit. So I get that. But look, they say it only represents our Judaism and that's it. So, okay, I mean, it is what it is. And even if it represented Israel, like, I think you're assholes, but still, you should be allowed to march in the parade. Who gives a fuck? Or should be who gives a fuck. And the excuse of I feel triggered, what are they going to do? What, are they going to call in some IDF airstrikes on you? Pipe down. It's really, no, they're not going to do that. You got to let them march. I believe them when they say, this just represents my Jewish faith and me being gay. Totally fine. And by the way, they spoke to, I think, one of the people who was kicked out with this flag. And she was like, by the way, yeah, I'm in favor of a two-state solution. And I'm in favor of an independent Palestinian state, a free and independent Palestinian state. So I tend to believe them when they say this doesn't represent Israel and LGBT pride. It's my Jewish faith and LGBT pride, which is totally fine. Okay. Okay, now go to Alex Jones and how he's losing his fucking mind. Oh, boy, do I love this story. Oh, do I love this story. Alex Jones is losing his mind, perhaps even worse than it was before, and it was already bad. So here he is attempting, I guess, comedy of some sort, failing miserably, and see if you can figure out what the hell he's trying to do here. I don't know exactly what he's trying to do here, but take a look.
Welcome to Brain Fight, ladies and gentlemen, with the real Tuck Butford. And I tell you, I want to thank tonight CBS News for allowing me to set the record straight about a public enemy number one and a scourge of America and the world. I'm not talking about Stephen Colbert. I'm talking about Alex Jones of InfoWars. That enemy of America stole my identity back in high school and my manly power, my manly voice. He took it from me and then spread his evil lies across the country and the world. And he stole not just my persona, he then projected his right-wing, evil, unalloyed racist views over me. And then that got picked up by Stephen Colbert, who unknowingly stole the identity of someone that had stolen my identity. So here tonight, thanks to CBS, here at Brain Fight with the real Tuck Butford, I am going to set the record straight about the fact that Alex Jones is a damn liar. I want to bring up my next guest, Donald John Trump. He's been on the show before, but he's now joining us again, and he better keep his mouth shut here for a minute, because I'm not like Alex Jones. I don't believe in political violence. That's why I promote it continually. That's called the oxymoron leftist mind control system that I bought into, because I want to be in charge. We have a record high stock market, $3-plus trillion, and he took us out of these multinational secret deals that took over Congress, like the TPP and the carbon tax, and now new big studies and mainstream news report it wasn't 3.3 million illegals that may have voted, but 5.7. So he lied to us. He said it was only 3.2, 3.3. He lied to us when it was 2 million or more than that, and he's the biggest liar keeping his promises I've ever seen. So when they have Shakespeare in the Park saying kill Trump, it's no big deal. Madonna says kill him, blow him up. Everybody, it's the coolest thing to do in the world, but the left then claims that the right wing's violent, because they are. I just want to say, you know, this isn't violent at all, okay? This right here, this is not violent at all when I do this to Trump. You understand? Let me just explain that to everybody. I mean, if I sit here and just start ripping his head off and doing this, this is liberal and this is open, and we ban free speech on colleges and arrest everybody, it's a good thing, okay? So, let's get that straight right now, that the real Tuck Buckford's here and Alex Jones and all the rest of them better understand that we run this country now, like North Korea, and I like Colbert. I don't want the tens of millions he gets selling out America. I love it. I absolutely love it. Tuck Buckford loves Colbert. I hate
What the fuck is that guy on? Okay, at times I think he's doing coke, but then you look at how much fatter he's getting, and that's unlikely, because people who do coke usually lose a shitload of weight, and he's blowing up. He looks like a meatball. He looks like a human meatball. His chins just keep getting more and more prominent. So I don't know what he's on, but damn, whatever it is, it's giving him a fuckload of energy. That's clear to see. What is he babbling about, man? I know he thinks this is funny and stuff, but I'm, like, watching it, waiting for a laugh line. I didn't get one. I would venture to guess even his fans didn't, like, laugh. At a certain point, I'm like, I guess he's trying to do a parody of, like, Stephen Colbert or something, but fucking the real Tuck Buckford, and he's wearing, like, a high school jacket, like a high school football jacket or something, like, what? You're, like, mixing jokes and analogies and shit here, and I don't get the... Okay, so in the middle there, he starts blowing Trump, because that's all his show is now. And the seamless transition from everything is a conspiracy ever to now he's the biggest ass-licker of the establishment currently, because his guy is president, so... Whatever the establishment does is great, and he's just like a standard right-wing talk radio host now, but I guess he's not standard because of the antics here, but his positions are seemingly standard because it's just Trump good, everybody else bad. And look at some of the arguments he uses. He talks about how, like, the market, oh, wealth was created, the market's up. The market doubled under Obama. Bush crashed the economy, it doubled under Obama, and if you notice, I never use that as an argument as to why Obama's doing great. Why? Because it's not a good indicator of how your average person is doing. It's an indicator of how the wealthy are doing. And furthermore, it's another fucking bubble. So yes, all the market's doing well under Trump. Yeah, but then there's going to be another giant crash. Because he's deregulating, he's cutting taxes for the rich. This is going to be like every other time in history that's been done. It'll be a boom-bust cycle. So okay, everything takes off, then everything will crash eventually. Duh. But he can't see that. Oh, the market's doing well, so Trump's good. Then he's fucking bullshit right-wing hack study talking about 5.7 million illegals voted. Completely and utterly made up. People who did that with a prior agenda going into it. Utter nonsense. It's preposterous that anybody believes that. And then at the end, it's like, so I thought that you guys are against the, oh, I'm triggered by the microaggression and, oh, fuck your safe space. And I thought you guys were on that page. By the way, I'm on that page. But no, when it's them, like, oh, there's a play that kills a president who kind of looks like Trump. I'm so triggered, oh, yeah, it's so bad and so wrong, and fucking Kathy Griffin, and then he beheads the fucking Trump pinata to make a point about how, what? It's wrong to kill presidents in effigy? Funny, you never said that under Obama when they're hanging him in effigy or lighting him on fire. That's free speech 101. I thought you were against political correctness. There's nothing more politically incorrect than killing a president in effigy. Now all of a sudden, you're against political incorrectness. You're for political correctness. So what the fuck are you doing, man? What are you doing? Like, the thing that kept popping up in my mind as I watched that is, like, what are you for, Alex Jones? What are you for? What are you for? What are you about? Why are you doing the show that you're doing? I tell you why we're doing our show. I want to give you news and information and facts and tell you what's going on in the world because I'm interested in all this stuff that we're talking about here. But on top of that, in giving news and information and facts, it's also, I want to explain and give evidence and give reasons as to why it is, for example, a single-payer system is better for healthcare. Why it is we should have free college. Fucking Slovenia has free college. They can do it, but we can't do it. Our tax dollars go to war needlessly all the fucking time, go to corporate welfare, but we can't do free college. I want to explain to you why the drug war is bullshit. I want to explain to you why we must re-regulate Wall Street. I want to give you this social democratic vision, give you news and information, and then also give you this social democratic vision and explain to you how we can make the country better and be proud of it. That's why we're doing what we're doing. Why are you doing what you're doing? What do you believe in, Alex? What do you believe in? You believe in being a fucking silly person, which is fine, but then don't take yourself so fucking seriously at the same time. You know, like, if you're just going to be a sheer entertainer and a goofball, be a sheer entertainer and a goofball. Drop the politics shtick. But no, he tries to have it both ways. Oh, I'm really serious and I'm on to the fucking globalists and everything's a fucking conspiracy. Sandy Hook was actors and blah, 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 blah. But then also you want to joke around and have a good time. Dude, you don't stand for anything. He says he's a libertarian, by the way. You're a libertarian, then why are you happy the TPP got killed? By the way, I'm happy TPP got killed. That's the one thing I give Trump credit for. But you're cheerleading the TPP got killed, but you say you're a libertarian. Libertarians are in favor of trade deals. They're in favor of that deal. Like, do you not even know what entails the philosophy that you say you believe in? Apparently he doesn't. Apparently he doesn't. He doesn't. He doesn't know anything. What do you stand for, Alex? What are your policies that you're in favor of? All I get from you is everything's a conspiracy and globalists are ruining everything, though you don't give, like, specific policy details on that. The fuck, man? What are you for? What are you for? What are you doing? You're just narcissistic weirdo who thinks he's funny and talks about how everything's a conspiracy. That's all I got. I don't know how anybody thinks this guy is, like, serious. He's got a huge following. He's got a bigger following than we do here at Secular Talk. Granted, he's been at it for way longer. He was doing this when I was in, probably in fucking diapers. So, okay, he's got a big-ass head start, but he's got a big following. This is the guy you're cheerleading, you know? Just want everybody to know that if you're an Alex Jones fan, aren't you a little embarrassed? Okay. Next, I got two more real quick. Squeeze them in, and then we're done for the day. The Supreme Court made a decision yesterday that could be a slippery slope away from separation of church and state. Raw Story reports here. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled Monday that Trinity Lutheran Church of Columbia, Missouri, will be allowed to get state funding to update a playground for safety reasons. The state of Missouri denied the funding, claiming that religious institutions can't be funded by the state. According to CNN's legal analyst Jeffrey Toobin, a footnote appears in the majority decision that says the case is only about playgrounds. The church argued that the playground equipment was not for the church, but for a secular daycare program. This case involves express discrimination based on religious identity with respect to playground resurfacing. We do not address religious uses of funding or other forms of discrimination, footnote number 3 reads. It's the court saying, let's take this one case at a time. We're not deciding all state tax money can go to religious institutions, Toobin said. His example was that if a church is burning down the fire department, a government institution still puts the fire out. However, he agreed that this will set up a precedent that encourages other religious institutions to get funding for things and sue when they are denied. But it doesn't mean they'll also win. Okay. So, this is like the definition of a slippery slope here in this decision. Because what they're saying is, okay, a church can get public money, can get tax money, because, hey, it's only going to their playground, and their playground is used for a secular daycare program. Well, first of all, the money was only supposed to go to schools in the first place. So the fact that you're a church and you're even asking for the money, is, I would already say, no, next case. So it was supposed to go to schools. But okay, let's broaden it out. Hey, it can go to other things too. It's just for a playground, and it's just... What they're trying to do here, the reasoning that they're trying to use is the same reasoning that they tried to use in the Hobby Lobby case. So they say, okay, yes, you know, you religious business owners can deny health insurance to their workers and say, you don't get birth control because we don't agree with birth control. And they try to carve out an area like, no, but it's just for this. It's just for birth control. But the problem is you can't do that because you just set a precedent, you jackasses. You can't let religious business owners pick and choose the type of health care their workers get based on their preferences, because then you open the door to doing exactly that. Now, in this case, you can't let tax money go to churches if they say, they're just saying it's for a secular reason, because then everybody else is going to sue and they're going to say, yes, okay, we're a church and we want public money. But why, or we're a, better example, we're a religious school and we want public money, but it's okay, don't worry, because we're only going to use the public money for our math class, which is secular. So what? We're a private religious school. Did I say public school before? I may have. We're a private religious school, and we want, sure, we teach religion and we indoctrinate people, but we're only asking for the public money for our math class, so that is secular. So how dare you reject us? You can't reject us. We're going to sue over it. Oh, look at what you've done. Look at what you've done. The logic you used in this case is now going to be used by every church and every school, religious school, to say, no, no, no. Sure, we want tax money, but we only want it for secular reasons. So give us the money. Well, then at that point, you've made it so that taxpayers subsidize religious schools and they subsidize churches. And if that doesn't bother you, which it should, because it's a clear violation of the First Amendment and separation of church and state, just imagine a scenario where it's mosques asking for the money. Well, hey, what? Sure, we're applying for money that's supposed to go to schools, but we have a playground at our mosque, and it's only used for a secular daycare program. So why doesn't the taxpayer give us this mosque money? Based on the reasoning of this case, you cannot say no to them. And think about it, it's even worse than that, because it's not like you're giving the state the option of accepting it and then giving them the tax money. You're telling the state you must give them the money if they ask for it. So any religious institution or religious school, if they say, hey, we want money for something that's secular, you have to give it. Oh, no, no, no. That's a destruction of separation of church and state. That's a serious blow to secularism, and it's a huge problem. Okay. Last story of the day, y'all. The United States, of course, is the world policeman and the protector of freedom and liberty and democracy, which is why Bahrain jailed activists over tweets but still gets U.S. arms deal. Yes. Spreading liberal values all over the world. Free speech, free expression, you know, liberty, justice, freedom. We just did an arms deal with Bahrain, who's jailing people over tweets. It's good people you want to arm, right? People who jail people over tweets. They say more than 3,000 people have been imprisoned in Bahrain since the 2011 Arab Spring as the government continues its crackdown on supposed dissidents. Over 100 have been killed. The small Arab monarchy is also home to the U.S.'s biggest regional naval base and historically a large consumer of U.S. arms. Those sales had been frozen by the U.S. following the country's attacks on protesters, but President Trump recently lifted those sanctions, allowing for the sale of $2.8 billion worth of American fighter jets. Last year, human rights activist Nabil Rajad was sent to prison for questioning the Bahrain government on Twitter, and he's facing 18 years. He criticized Trump for overlooking human rights abuses and pursuing the arms deals. Okay. Look, this is, Glenn Greenwald said it best, and he said it in reference to Saudi Arabia. The U.S.-Saudi relationship is a one-stop shop for debunking all the propaganda about the U.S. and our foreign policy and our intentions. Oh, we believe in freedom and liberty and democracy and we're the world policemen, which is why we're going to give money and weapons to a country that doesn't let women drive, doesn't give them equal rights, has male guardians over them, beheads people in the public square for sorcery and witchcraft and apostasy and drug smuggling, and they say all atheists are terrorists. And they're slaughtering innocent people in Yemen on purpose. So on that alone, you're not the world policeman, you don't believe in freedom, you don't believe in democracy, it's all about business interests, business as usual. If you're our ally and you do it, it's okay, and we're going to say you're one of the good guys. We do it with them, we do it with Qatar, we do it with the Gulf states, Bahrain. So spare me your propagandistic bullshit. Not the case that we're looking out for freedom and democracy. If you've fallen for it, that's really sad. Sad. Okay. Out of time, guys. I love you. Kyle and Corin tomorrow. You know the deal. And then we're back on Thursday. Love you, baby. See you soon. Mwah.